Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm here, man. Are y'all ready for the fire talk? Slow down on the biz and uplift the dialogue. Oh, yeah. Listen right along. This is straight off the press. The remix fresh with no prior song. Oh. Supplying y'all with the certified thoughtful. Yeah. To give a piece to the feet, it's time to call blow. Yeah. The raspberry wind is fragrant, flavorful. Insatiable eardrum, taste the radio. Here can't be beat. The clash with me. Better leave all your doors and all half the week. What? Positive or motivational strategy. Successful guests promote yourself. Masturbate. BlogTalkRadio.com/The remix Fridays at 10 p.m. Eastern. Support the sister with a great reason. I must insist, don't miss it this evening. Peace, man.
Family. Hey, everybody. It is Esther. What's going on? Welcome to the remix, everybody. How is everybody doing? Yes, tonight we are going to get into the magic of harvest time with our official gardener for the remix, Mr. Anderson. Woo! Right? So you know this share is going to be off the chain and very magical. So you definitely want to make sure that you are on the lines tonight. So the call-in number is 646-652-2711. Go ahead and get your questions ready. I've had some of the Remix family posting questions already online on the Remix family page, on the Remix radio page. So if you have questions for Mr. Anderson and you want to go ahead and get them on, go ahead and post them there. If you can get on the line, you definitely want to get on the line. So 646-652-2711 and press 1 when you get on. You can also use Skype to call in. The chat room is open, so if you want to join us in chat, come over to www.blogtalkradio.com/the remix and sign in. Hey, everyone. Peace to everyone in the chat room. So if you all weren't here last week on Friday and Sunday, oh, my goodness, you all missed some amazing, amazing shares. Me and Miss Blue was on our worst behavior on Friday. We was on our worst behavior on Friday, and Sunday, Miss Blue went deep into the underworld to connect with our ancestors, and that was just a really powerful and amazing weekend and amazing share. So if you missed any of those shows, you definitely want to go back and download. All of the shows are available on the Remix radio page on Blog Talk. You can subscribe to the Remix podcast on iTunes and have all of the episodes downloaded automatically to your PC, your MP3, wherever you want it. Right, KT7? Download, download, download. Shout out to Miss Blue. I know y'all waiting to hear her voice, right? Miss Blue is here. Miss Blue is in the chat room. She is doing her work, you know. She is doing her work, and she is present here. So shout out, of course, and much love to Miss Blue and to Sister Monya. Definitely sending a lot of love your way, sis. And peace, of course, to Brother Bobby Hammond and the Sister Linda and all of the Remix family. Just want to send some love and peace out to everyone out there. I also want to give a big shout out to the sisters in the priestesshood. Woo-hoo! We had so much fun this week. Shout out to all the sisters there. And, of course, big shout out to everyone who is self-invested. I don't have a bell to ring, so we'll just pretend that Miss Blue is ringing her bell in the background. Ding, 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 ding. So shout out to everyone that's self-invested as well. And as you all know, we have our Mastermind series starting this weekend with Miss Blue and Brother Bilal. So everyone is super excited and ready for that. Yes, yes, indeed. So also, just want to mention that the Kim Deck If you all haven't ordered your Kim deck, you want to go ahead and order www.missblueblast.com/cards. The audio workbook is also there. And if you want to hit Miss Blue up, like I said, she's in the chat room tonight, but if you want to hit her up, she always loves to read your emails, her and Sister Manya. It's questionforblue@gmail.com, QUESTION, the number 4, Blue, BLUE, at gmail.com. And then, of course, you all know you can connect with all of us on the Remix Family page on Facebook or the Remix Radio page. The Remix Radio page, you can go right over on Facebook and search for it, the Remix Radio, and click like, and then you'll have access to everybody. Yes, yes. Whew, all right. Before I go on, I want to make sure I give some shouts out to all of our international callers. I see all of you. Y'all are all over the place tonight. So I want to start off by giving a shout out to the United Kingdom, Canada, the Netherlands, Australia, Barbados, the Bahamas, Jamaica, Germany, Italy, Lithuania, Egypt, Indonesia, Malaysia, France, Austria, Saudi Arabia, Kenya, Poland, Ghana, Aruba, Belgium, India, Ireland, South Africa, Mozambique, wow, Sweden, Spain, Madagascar, Sudan, Guadalupe, and Venezuela, Seychelles, and of course everyone here in the U.S. What's going on, y'all? Yes, shout out to everyone. So I think it's time for us to dance. And, of course, we want to hear a little bit of Baby Blue before we get ready to bring on Mr. Anderson, our official remix gardener. I'm so excited. So, all right, let's get ready to move around, you all. Peace and love to all the Remix family, everyone on the line. If you're not on the line, get on it, 646-652-2711, and press 1 when you get on. And let's get ready to dance, y'all. Let's get ready to move around. All right, let's hear some Baby Blue first.
La 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 la, the remix. Hey, this is Baby Blue. And remember, if nothing else moves you, life will.
Good God Almighty, like back in the old days. You know, years ago, they had the A&R men to tell you what to play, how to play it, you know, whether it's disco or rock. But we just went in the studio and we did it. We had champagne in the studio, of course, you know, compliments of the company. And we just laid back and did it. So we hope you enjoy listening to this album half as much as we enjoy playing it for you. Because we had a ball. Only real music's gonna last. All that other bullshit is here today and gone tomorrow.
Like 91 Dan Marino. I swear this guy Michael Rapino's boosting my ego. Overly focused, it's far from the time to rest now. Debate's growing about who they think is the best now. Took a while, got the jokers out of the deck now. I'm holding all the cards and niggas wanna play chess now. I hear you talking, say it twice so I know you meant it. Fuck it, I don't even tend it, they should know who's in it. I'm authentic, real name, no gimmicks, no game, no scrimmage. I ain't playing with you niggas at all. My classmates, they went on to be chartered accountants or work with their parents. But thinking back on how they treated me, my high school reunion might be worth an appearance. Make everybody have to go through security clearance. Tables turn, bridges burn, you live and learn. With the ink, I could murder word of my nigga Irv. Yeah, I swear shit just started clicking, dog. You know it's real when you are who you think you are.
Everything around me. $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100, $100,
Benzes for you had braces. The all black Maybach, but I'm not a racist. The inside's white in the Katy Perry's faces. Yellow diamonds in my Jesus. I just might learn to speak Mandarin. Japanese for the yen that I'm handling. International hoe, that's my handle. My Saint Chongon, light a candle. El Gran Santo on the mantle. In case y'all didn't know, I speak Spanish too. Shout out to World Wide West. Everywhere we go, we leave a worldwide mess. Yes, still rock La Familia. Says a lot about you if you're not feeling us. The homie said, Hov, it ain't many of us. I told him, less is more, niggas, plenty of us.
Cash through everything around me. Freeze. The money, dollar bill, y'all.
Cake. 500 million, I got a pound cake. Niggas is frontin', that's upside down cake. Get them a red nose, they clown cakes. I should've never let you round cake. Look at my neck, I got a carrot cake. Now here's the icing on the cake. I'm just getting started, oh yeah, we got it, bitch. I done made more millionaires than the lotto did. They made millions, Big made millions. Ye made millions, Just made millions. Leon made millions, Cam made millions. Beans will tell you if he wasn't in the ceilings. I'm back in my bag. My eyes bloodshot, but my jet don't lag. A pair of Jordan 3's trying to chase this cab. Gucci airbag just in case we crash. Last night was mad trill. I'm fresh out of Advil, Jesus rather will.
Something to do. Yeah, I guess that's just who I became, dog. Nothing
All right. That was Pound Cake by Drake featuring Jay-Z off the Nothing Was the Same album, which I think is probably me and Miss Blue's favorite album right now. So, yeah. Right. So shout out to Drake, you know, shout out to Drake. All right, so let's get ready to bring on the official gardener of the remix, Mr. Anderson, who is, of course, no stranger to the remix. I believe that this is you. Peace, Mr. Anderson.
Greetings, greetings.
How are you doing?
I'm good, I'm good. How are you?
I am wonderful. I am wonderful. everybody in the chat room is throwing you hearts and giving you love, of course. And I know it's been a minute since you have been on the remix, and everybody is so excited to have you come back on. So I thought it would be good to start off just by talking about what's been going on with you, like what's new in your world, any of your new projects, which I'm sure you got plenty that you're working on, all of that wonderful stuff.
Well, I'm glad that you guys are excited about having me on. I have been doing a lot of practical application with my gardening. So, you know, I have actually been putting gardens together all throughout Atlanta and, you know, experimenting with my magic grow ring and learning from the trials and errors of the seasons. This year in Atlanta, we had a very interesting spring and summer. It was like a monsoon almost. So we had so much rain, I had to figure out how to deal with all of the rain. I was using a lot of neem oil this past season, so I was experimenting on how the plants reacted to the neem oil, doing a lot of, like I said, research and development on how the grow ring was working. I had been trying to develop a house plant formula for the grow ring so that it wouldn't stink up the house, and if it would actually create magic with the house plant. So I just been doing a lot of practical application, growing in the garden, learning in the garden, and, you know, sharpening my sword, so to speak.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. I want to start off, I know that you are definitely not a stranger to the remix, and so I would say most people here know who you are, but for those who may be new to the remix family, can you talk just a little bit about your background, how you got into gardening, how you got to where you are now with, you know, what you were just speaking about, the practical application, for all of our new remixers?
Okay, that's great. So I actually started gardening in a subdivision in Texas, a suburb of Dallas. And before I started gardening there, my father had a garden in Michigan, but I never really enjoyed it at all. He would make me go sometime, and it was more work than it was learning or anything like that. So I really didn't have like a big time gardening background when I was younger. But when I grew up, I guess he must have planted that seed in me or something. But when I grew up, of course, got a house in the subdivision and all of that, and was homeschooling my children, and started a gardening project as one of the schooling lessons, and didn't really know, you know, up from down, left from right type of thing, just kind of planted some things. One thing that we did plant was some peppermint, and, you know, that's like a very resilient plant. So it took off and started, you know, spreading and everything. So that kind of got us intrigued about, you know, how things could grow. So the peppermint was definitely a special plant starting out because it takes over. It's very invasive. After you start gardening for a long time, it probably won't be a good thing. But at that time, starting out, that was a good thing. So then we were just kind of planting everything haphazardly and stuff that wasn't in the right season, whatever seeds we saw. Yeah, all of that. So
a lot of trial and error.
So as that progressed, of course, being in homeschool and all that, you go to the library a lot, so you start self-educating yourself. And the more that we got into it, I kind of took more to it than the actual kids and family did and started, you know, becoming overzealous about it. But it was actually, it came to me quite natural after I got put in the right direction, so to speak, and started learning about the seasons and, you know, how to get the most yield and the different types of gardening, the raised bed and the, you know, the no digs and the compost and so forth and so on. So just kept advancing and advancing. And, you know, people would come by and go in the backyard and see all these vegetables growing in the backyard. Wow, how'd you do that? Wow, I always wanted to do that. And was it hard? And, you know, was it hard? And how did you do it? And did you notice? And when did you figure this out? So forth and so on. So the more and more questions I got, I seen that people were very intrigued by gardening, but it was a big learning curve. So the more questions I asked, of course, the better I got. And I'm the type of person that if I tell you something, I want to be able to, you know, back it up with some experience. So it caused me to, you know, want to garden more and more and more. Like I said, I seen that it was a need and people was very intrigued by it. So that propelled me into, you know, reaching out to people and offering, you know, myself as a coach or a guide, so to speak, for gardening in the suburban and urban setting, because I wasn't dealing with, like, farms and different things like that. I was dealing with, like, the average everyday American dream that people always talk about, having a house with a picket fence type thing. And so as I continued to do that, coaching people and showing them how to do it, it made me better and better. And then I was transferred from Texas to Atlanta. So then when I moved to Atlanta, Atlanta was really receptive to gardening, because not to say there's not a lot of vegetarian, vegan people in Texas, I just wasn't exposed to all of that.
Right, but,
when I got to Atlanta, it was like, you know, vegan, vegetarian was just common. It's all get
out. Booming, common.
Very common, and then they even, you know, had a communities that took it a step further and didn't even cook the vegetables. So I was like, wow, you know, I fit in really well with that. So once I got to Atlanta, I already had the I Grow, You Grow concept in my head and kind of experimenting with it. But when I came to Atlanta is when I really, you know, turned it into more of a business type of thing. And got the website and the Facebooks and the YouTube, and then I started YouTubing my garden experiences. And, you know, as I did the video, of course, I had to get it more organized and, you know, caught in from the beginning type of mentality with the gardening, which only made me more in tune with the garden and caused me to be able to prepare for things, you know, 3 months out and things like that, before and after and such and such. So I kept going with that. And then as I learned, you know, to do it without the chemicals and things of that nature, my battles with rabbits and my battles with deers and my battles with worms, vine borers and all of these things, and people was very interested in those kind of things. And it helped when people saw somebody that was seasoned that garden still have these problems. And I wasn't afraid to share, you know, my mistakes. I'm just honest like that. So, you know, and the world is ruled by self-interest. So people, if they're interested in gardening, and then they also can understand that even the most seasoned gardener or whatever still has pitfalls, ups and downs, makes mistakes, plants die on them, bugs eat them, rabbits and all these different kind of things. So I shared a lot of this experience on my YouTube channel. And then I ran into Miss Blue in the remix. And she was very receptive to my movement and the things that I was doing, and reached out. You know, we talked and we started doing shows, and I became the official gardener of the remix.
Yes, yes.
Which was great, and exposed me to a lot of different people. And, you know, people to this day still call me, you know, that they heard me on the remix and so forth and so on. So even people from London, like all of the different people that you, countries and stuff that you called out.
Yeah.
And we, you know, had the same callers from Jamaica and things, you know, different things like that. So the remix was real instrumental in helping me, you know, build up a nice base of people that was interested in vegetable gardening. So I Grow, You Grow, you know, I had turned it into, you know, my own methodology of gardening, and I got it down to, you know, where I can coach people and take them from, you know, seed to harvest and everything in between, on pest controls, on fertilizers, most of the household goods that you have around you can use in your garden. So it's just for people that, you know, didn't know me or their first time on a remix, that's kind of taking you through it on a speedier fashion. I mean, it's a lot of details in between that. It's a lot of, you know, techniques and things that we share as far as, like, pest control, natural pest control, you know, what types of gardens, all that, which I'm sure we'll deal with as the show progresses. But that's just kind of a skinny on, you know, me starting out to how I got to the point that I am now with gardening.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And, of course, all the Remix family knows that you can go back through the archives and see all of the Mr. Anderson shows. They are definitely there just to hear, you know, a lot, because every time you come on, you share some new insight that you found, and always been open about the trials and errors and what works and what didn't work. So definitely go back and download those shows. Can you talk a little bit about what would you tell the new gardener? So someone who is just about to start, let's say they want to start, you know, tomorrow, doing something. What would you say to them, and what kind of insight would you give them to get started?
If a first timer, I would
first-timer.
Say, yeah, I would say to them is first find out. The first thing that I would do is the location. I would identify the location that I'm going to try to garden in, because several times people start their garden where they want the garden to be, but the garden will tell you where it should be. And the thing of that is, you know, the textbooks basically sometimes you backed into a corner where this is the only space that you have and you got to make it work or whatever. But the location is very important. So I would say that the first thing for a first-timer would be to find a good location. And I would guess if they start in the garden, they either going to try to do it at their own house, their mother's house, kinfolk's house, mm-hmm. something like that. But get you a compass and orient yourself with your surroundings, you know, north, east, west, and south. And once you do that, find a place that's getting a lot of sun. So I would say, you know, the location, before you go out and buy the plants and prep the soil and all of that, just check the area where you're thinking about putting the garden at about when you wake up first thing in the morning, you see where the sun is hitting it. Then check it at noon, see where the sun is hitting it. Then check it at 6 o'clock that p.m. and see where the sun is hitting. Because basically what you want to do is get the optimal sunlight. That's probably one of the biggest mistakes beginners make is putting the garden under too much shade or location that's not getting enough sunlight. That's probably the one of the biggest mistakes. So I would say for somebody who wants to do that, orient yourself with your surroundings. Find the most sunny spot in your area that you're going to be gardening in. That would be my first advice. Then after
there's
that,
a question about that. Mm-hmm. There's a question in the chat room about the difference between evening sunlight and morning sunlight.
Okay.
So someone's saying they moved their garden from the evening sunlight to the morning sunlight, and is that okay?
It is okay. The morning, of course, the morning sunlight is going to be more concentrated, I would say, or be the best sunlight, because in the morning you have the dew on the plants and, you know, that moisture. So in the morning you want them to get that light so that it can, you know, dry up that dew, so to speak. Because if it's getting shaded in the morning time, that dew is going to sit on the plant and it will breed like mildew, fungus, bugs can eat on it better when it's moist. So you want to get the plant, that morning sun. You want it to have morning and evening sun, but if you can only get one, I would say, yeah, get that morning and noon sun, because it's going to take the dew off of the plant and the less moisture that's on the actual plant, the healthier and more vigor that the plant will have. Of course, you want the soil to be moist and all of that, but you don't really want your plant to hold a lot of water. That's like when people water their plants, they usually make the mistake of putting water all on the leaves and all over the plant.
Yeah.
But you don't really want to do that. You want to water the base of the plant and get the water all down to the root, and the root to pull the water up to the leaves and stuff like that. There is certain times when you do put the water directly on the plant, but that has its place and its time. So the morning sun definitely is, if you have to choose between one or the other, is the best.
Okay, thank you. came up while you were discussing the sun.
Mm-hmm. So the beginner, the location is probably the optimal thing for a beginner. And then what you want to do in the beginning of your gardening is you want to be having a nice south-facing garden. So when you're looking out, you want to be facing south, and that means that the sun will be coming up on your, if you're facing south, the sun will be coming up on your left hand side, and then it'll be going down on your right hand side. So that's how you determine the ideal location for the you know, to set the garden up. You want to be facing south and smack dab in the middle if you can, but if you can't, you can go southwest, southeast, or whatever. And the reason why that is because the sun moves in a southern trajectory, meaning once it come up in the east, it's going to stay in the southern sky all the way until it gets to the west and go down in the rise in the east and go down in the west, but it's going to be in a southern trajectory. So that's one of the first things that a beginner needs to consider. And if you want the second step, let me know, or you want to...
Yes, definitely. Keep going. They're loving it in the chat room. I think this is awesome.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So that location is the first thing. And then the next thing to consider is the soil. Is what type of soil you going to use? Are you going to try to deal with your existing soil? Or are you going to, you know, have some soil brought in? Or are you going to get some compost? Or, you know, what kind of growing medium are you going to be dealing with? If you're dealing with the existing soil, more than likely, you know, people are going to tell you that you need to get a soil test. Or you want to test the soil. And normally what you test in the soil for is the is it a acidic soil, or is it alkaline soil, or what they would say the pH of the soil. And then also you want to know, like, if you're in Georgia, it's going to be like red clay. Or if you in, you know, upper north, or if you, you know, farther west, it's going to be like a loamy soil or a sandy soil. So you want to identify the type of soil that you're going to be dealing with. Or what I like to do, because you know, 9 times out of 10 you're probably in a subdivision, or you really don't have no way of dealing with, you know, this soil.
Mm-hmm.
You can send it off to the county extension. All you have to do is like type in a Google search, test my soil in zip code whatever, and then they'll tell you where to send it. You can send it off and all of that. But the problem with that is once you get the test back, then now you got to deal with enriching the soil and all of that. Well, you can just go get compost. Compost is the perfect medium for growing. It's called black. They call it black gold in the gardening world. So I would get the compost. Usually what I advocate for the urban, suburban farmer or gardener is to do like a raised bed and build up on top of the existing soil for two reasons. One reason is usually in these subdivisions or in the suburban setting or whatever, they have wires and gas lines and, you know, data lines and all kind of stuff going underground nowadays more than telephone poles above, wires above. And if you're out there trying to, you know, till it up or dig or do all these different sprinkler systems is in a lot of these subdivisions and suburban settings, and that's the last thing you want to do is, you know, hit a sprinkler system or something like that, or hit a wire or do anything like that digging. So I usually build up on top of the existing soil, and I use advocate a method called like the no-dig method, where you're not really having to dig into the soil. You're building up on the existing soil with compost. And a lot of times you can get compost from a municipal source in your area. You just have to kind of find it. Usually it's where the landfill is or where you take, you know, trash when they give you that once a year to dump the trash. They usually have a compost pile there, so you can get the compost for free. And, you know, you can get a nice amount of it for free. Or you can buy compost at the home gardening centers. They sell it in the bags. Lowe's seem to have some pretty affordable compost. I buy a lot of my compost from Lowe's. And in my videos, in my YouTube videos, I have one video called a no-dig method. If you go to YouTube and you search iGrowUGrow, I-G-R-O-W-U-G-R-O-W, to take you through it step-by-step, show you the type of compost and everything and how to build it up. It's fairly simple. So that would be the second thing, is the grow medium, and I advocate compost. And starting out, you know, buy the compost or go to the municipal source and get the compost. But as you start going, then you get into a whole nother arena of gardening, which is compost and making your own compost.
Wow. Okay.
And once you make your own compost, we got videos to show you how to do that as well, but that's a whole nother science of making your own compost.
Yeah,
which, I mean, we definitely can get into it if, you know.
I was going to say, you know, we have some beginners and we definitely have some, you know, advanced gardeners out there. So I think you definitely can go into that. What is compost? How would you make it if you were to do it on your own? You know, all of that, definitely.
Okay, so like I said, the second thing would be the grow medium, and we advocate compost, and compost is likened unto black gold. And this is where I kind of steer from the beaten path for normal gardeners. I look at that as like a type of alchemy when you make your own compost, because you're taking something of a lesser value, like a scrap or something, and then you turn it into gold or black gold, which is what the folklore is behind alchemy, is taking a lesser metal or alloy and turning it into a valuable metal or alloy, which is gold. So you're taking these scrap materials and you're making your own compost. So compost is decompensation, meaning that something is being broken down and decomposed from what it was into something else. So like leaves, when they fall naturally to the ground, if you don't rake them up, they'll just break down into humus or compost, or decompose into, and once it decomposes, it'll decompose into this powdery type substance or soil-like substance. So that occurs natural, but it's a formula that you can use as a gardener to create your own compost. And like I say, starting out, you won't be able to make enough compost to do like a whole garden, but eventually, once you make the pile and get the pile going, the next season you'll be able to add your own compost and, you know, replenish your garden or build onto your garden with your own compost. Or you could just get into the composting right now and compost throughout the fall and the winter, and have your own made compost for the spring season coming up. But either way, what composting is, what has to happen for compost to occur, you have to have a nitrogen-based substance and a carbon-based substance with water and air.
Okay.
Nitrogen-based substance, carbon-based substance, water or moisture, and then air. So the formula like scares a lot of people or whatever. But
what would be an example of a nitrogen-based substance or a carbon-based substance?
Right, exactly. So you need three parts carbon-based substance to one part nitrogen-based substance. So a nitrogen-based substance would be anything that's like grains. So, like, say your kitchen scraps, orange peels, apple cores, salad clippings, onion skins, the stuff off of the garlic, all the stuff you chop up in your kitchen that doesn't have any oil or starch, like bread, no. You don't want to compost bread, rice, like cooked rice. You don't want to do cooked rice. You don't want to do anything that got oil in it. You don't want to do any meat products. You don't want to do any no meat products, no eggs, none
what
like
about
that.
Like seaweed? Would seaweed or tea leaves, would that be considered?
That's a green.
A nitrogen.
Yeah,
green.
That's a nitrogen base. Yeah. Seaweed would be great. Kiwis, you know, all of that type of stuff is a nitrogen-based substance. Your salad clippings, you said tea grind, coffee grind. Coffee grinds is definitely a nitrogen-based substance. And I use coffee grinds as a major component of my composting. And I get coffee grinds from Starbucks and from, like, workplaces and stuff like that. That's an excellent source of nitrogen-based for composting. And coffee also can be added to the garden as a side dressing to coffee grinds because they are very high in nitrogen. If you need a nitrogen boost, you can put the coffee grinds out there. So that would be an instance of a nitrogen-based substance. And what happens a lot of times when people start composting, they just always take all their kitchen scraps and throw them in a bin.
Throw
or
them together.
Yeah.
Yes. I've seen that before.
Right. And they just keep throwing the kitchen scraps out there and keep throwing the kitchen scraps out there. And all that nitrogen-based stuff just starts turning into liquid and gnats and bugs and, and stuff like that. And the reason why that happens is because you don't have the right ratio of carbon to offset the nitrogen. Because people got a lot more of that kitchen scrap stuff than they do of the carbon stuff, they think. But the carbon base is not really that hard to come by. Carbon base is like newspaper, crepe paper, cardboard, brown paper bags, leaves, brown leaves, dried up leaves, wood chip is carbon based. I already said paper, newspaper, crepe paper, shredded paper, paper bags, wood leaves, leaves clippings, wood chips, twigs, brown stuff that's, you know, brown.
Yeah, brown.
But you need three parts of that to every one part of the nitrogen-based substance. So that would mean what I usually like to tell people is get a bowl or a bucket or something that you can use. And if you had that one bowl and you fill that bowl up with scraps and you go throw it out in your bin or your pile, then you need to have something set aside where you can scoop up three bowls of shredded paper or three bowls of leaves or three bowls of brown to add to that one bowl of green. And once you keep that ratio going, then it'll start breaking itself down and creating heat and breaking itself down. But if you put more nitrogen than you do carbon, you're going to get that stinky mess, and you're going to get bugs and varmints and stuff like
and
that.
And all the nastiness. So you said that the ratio was three parts carbon for every one part nitrogen.
Yeah. And carbon is basically shredded paper to salad clippings or kitchen scraps.
Okay.
Right?
Would you ever use ashes or anything from, like, a fire pit? Would that ever be used in compost?
It can be used in composting, but it can be worked into the soil directly. It can be worked directly into the soil, pot ash. And pot ash is, you have three different kind of nutrients that's real essential to feeding the lawn or feeding the garden, and that's NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And the wood ashes have a lot of phosphorus in them. So you can add that directly to the to the soil. But yeah, you could put the pot ashes or the ashes into the compost pile. It's going to do more of enriching the compost versus helping the formula of decomposition.
Okay, yeah.
It has more of an enriching factor to it than actually starting the decomposition process.
Got you. So yeah, then you have to add the water. And how much water do you put in?
Well, normally with that nitrogen base, it's going to start turning into liquid on its own. But, like, after you, if it's in a container, if your compost, if you're keeping it in a container with a lid on it and stuff like that, you turn it. And when you turn it, you check it. And if you turn it over and you see, like, a lot of dryness or a lot of brown, then you could just put one part water in it. So the same bucket that you did with your greens and your browns, just put one bucket of water if you see that it's dry. But normally, you don't have to add a lot of water. And then sometimes people have it as just a pile, and the rain outside is going to give it the moisture that it needs if it's lacking any moisture. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you don't have enough compost, can you add soil? Can you have soil and compost together, like when you're making it, if you don't have enough to make it?
Well, I wouldn't add the soil.
Okay.
I would, if you supplement it with some store-bought compost. Like a lot of people that start making a compost pile, they advocate that you introduce some store-bought compost or somebody else's compost into your compost, because the compost already has, like, some microorganisms in it, and they'll spread to the new compost pile and help get things, like, jump-started. They'll help get things jump-started.
Got you. Great. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first thing for a beginner was the location and where to locate the, situate the garden and set it up. And then the next thing was to get the compost or the growing medium that you're going to grow in. And we kind of specialize on the urban and suburban setting. Like big sprawling farms and stuff like that, I don't I ain't never really done that, so I'm sure.
Okay.
Same principles, but you need tractors and all that kind of stuff, and so if we got any of them big time farmers on there, we probably could talk.
Right, we had them call in. We had a big time farmers call in. So if you are, you're making your own compost and you mixed all this together and you let it sit somewhere. So if you are, let's say, I'm in Chicago and I'm kind of in a very, I live in downtown Chicago, so I'm in a very urban area. So I definitely probably couldn't do this type of mixture, at least not out in the open. So what would you do next if you're somewhere where you can't, like, sit it outside somewhere? If you're inside and you have to do this in the house or you don't have a big space, where would you do this at?
Okay, now, if you're in that kind of situation, you wouldn't be able to compost on a large scale like that, because more than likely your garden wouldn't be that large for one. You probably would have a patio garden, a container garden, or something to that effect. So the compost that you could use would be more for enriching your garden or like side dressing your garden or adding it to potting soil or something like that. And that type of composting it fancies itself for indoors is called vermicomposting, where you take worms and you let the worms do the composting for you. And when they break it down, they eat it and break it down, but then they pass it or cast it, and it's called worm casting. but the technique is vermicomposting.
Okay.
And just for the people who, you know, composting the way that I just explained it before, it's a video on the YouTube, on the I Grow, You Grow channel on YouTube that spells it all out and gives you the visual. And you can see it and everything. And then the indoor composting that I'm going to describe to you and the method to do for indoor composting, it's a video on there as well on how to do this.
Okay.
What you do is you would do a 5-gallon bucket if you in a, you know, suburban area, you know, balcony living, loft living type thing, and you get a bucket, like a 5-gallon bucket, and you need a lid for this bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So you buy the bucket and the lid, and then you drill some holes around the top edge of it, drill holes in there. And these holes are going to be for air to get into the bucket with the lid on it. While the lid is on it, you want air to get into the bucket. And you drill a drain hole at the bottom of the bucket. And then, of course, you're going to need something underneath it to catch the liquid that's going to form and drain off of it. Because once they get to eating and you put the vegetable scraps in there and stuff, it's going to create some liquid. And then it'll drain out of that drain hole. But you want to catch that liquid because that liquid is also can be mixed with water and water, use it to water your plants and your garden and stuff. So you need a bucket. You need the drill holes, or you could do it with a knife or whatever. And then you need shredded paper, like crepe paper, newspaper. You need shredded paper. And then you need these worms, and these worms are not the nightcrawler worms, but the red wiggler worms or pan worms. And the nightcrawler, the reason why you don't want him, that big fat worm. He's kind of an individual. He don't like to be living around a lot of other worms. So he's like non-communicable. So,
yeah, I can see that.
You don't want the night crawler. You want the panfish or the pan worm or the trout worm or the red wiggler. And those worms, like, work together as a community, and they don't mind being tied up around each other. And in the video, I show you where you can get the worm at and everything and the type of worm and all of that in the bonus footage. You watch the whole video, then you get the bonus footage. I actually go into the store where I buy the worms at and show you which one to get. But so you need the red wiggler and the shredded paper. So you put the shredded paper in there and you moisten the shredded paper to begin with, and then you need some kind of grit for the worms when they start eating, because they don't have teeth, of course, so they use like the sand and stuff that's out in the nature to help eat stuff and break stuff down, but you're not putting sand and all that in there. You need to give them a medium, so you could put the coffee grinds in there. Put coffee grinds, shredded paper, then put the worms in there. And
does this give off a smell while this is going on? So you're in a small place.
If you do it right, it don't give off a smell. If you do it right,
okay,
it doesn't give off a smell, and that's why you should follow this process that I'm telling you pretty strictly. So once you first get the paper in there and then you get the coffee grinds in there, you put the worms in there, you let the worms get acclimated for about a good week, four to 7 days, let them get acclimated because they'll bed down in that shredded paper as they're bedding. And you let them get acclimated in there before you start introducing any kitchen scraps. So once you let them get acclimated into the bedding, then you want to put, like, maybe one banana peel, maybe the shavings from one cucumber. You want to start out slow with the vegetable scraps. Don't dump no whole bowl of stuff in there because they can't eat it that fast.
Yeah.
You just want, like, one banana peel, you know, like I'm saying, the skin off of one cucumber and put that in there and let them eat that. And as they start eating that and, you know, take that down, they'll start reproducing and you'll have more worms coming. And as your worms supply build up, then they'll be able to eat more food and you'll gradually be able to add maybe two banana peels and, you know, two things of skin. You ain't going to be dumping a whole lot of vegetables into this medium.
Right, yeah.
Because if you do that, you're going to get a lot of gnats and then it's going to start stinking and all this. So this is in your house. You want to introduce that vegetable scraps in there just real slow. And then as they start, you will see the paper start breaking down in these little brown specks that will start looking like soil. Then you kind of can harvest that if you need it at that time or push it to the side, push it kind of to one side, and then put more shredded paper in there and moisten it down, and then they'll move from that area that they're in into the new paper. And then you harvest it like that, and it just keeps going on and on.
Keep going, yeah.
Yeah,
cool.
And then once you take that, the casting that they give you, you use that in your side, dress it around your pot, around your plants, at the base of your plants, work it into the soil and stuff like that, and then that's going to enrich and feed all of the stuff that you know, growing.
Wow.
And that's called vermicomposting. But like I said, you can get a visual from YouTube.
Is it Verma, like V-E-R-M-A, Verma composting?
V-E-R-M-I, Verma.
Okay, V-E-R-M-I, Verma composting.
Yeah, Verma composting. Uh-huh. And then if you Google that, you're going to come up with a whole lot. People sell that worm casting and stuff in a bag, but once again, you can make your own.
Make your own. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I just want to tell everybody we live with Mr. Anderson, and we will be taking questions pretty soon. So you definitely want to get on the line, 646-652-2711, press 1. And Mr. Anderson, I actually had people posting on the Remix page with some questions. So very shortly, I'm going to read some of the questions that some of the Remix family posted earlier. But I want you to go ahead and continue explaining the process. And then I know the other thing that you always talk about when you come on is the whole kitchen garden and growing the vegetables and everything in the bag. So I definitely want you to touch on that as well.
Okay. Okay. So as far as the composting, like I said, you could either start out now, you know, just building a compost pile for the spring, but the quickest, you know, most microwavable way in our society is to go out and buy the compost.
Yeah.
Or go to the municipal place and get it free by the truck or whatever. That's, you know, how to do that. But you were saying growing out of the bag, or what direction you want to go in next?
The kitchen. I think we can start with the kitchen garden, because I know that that's something that a few people had questions about, was how you would actually start the kitchen garden, or what would you grow in the kitchen, those
okay.
type of questions. There were some people that definitely asked about that.
Okay. So kitchen gardening, maybe they may be thinking that it's a garden inside the kitchen. That's not what I call kitchen garden. The reason why I deal with kitchen garden is because the definition of kitchen garden is a small garden situated near your kitchen, which is for the facilitating of being able to go out of the kitchen, get the vegetables, and bring them back into the kitchen. So
there you go. Yes.
This type of gardening is conducive to a suburban urban setting, because you're gardening for the purpose of bringing this food into your kitchen and using it. Because it might sound strange to you, but a lot of times people grow gardens We still there?
I'm here, yes, I'm here.
Okay. A lot of times people grow gardens and they don't harvest the stuff, or it doesn't ever make it onto the kitchen table. Funny
wow.
as that sounds, it happens. And I always advocate to tell people, grow the things that you eat.
Yeah.
If you don't eat eggplants, don't grow eggplants. If you don't eat, you know, if you don't eat cabbage, don't grow cabbage. Grow
yeah.
the things. Eat what you grow. I advocate eat what you grow. If you're a person that just likes tomatoes and peppers, then there's nothing wrong with having a garden full of tomatoes and peppers. You know, if you don't like cabbage or bok choy or whatever, don't grow that, because what happens is you get intrigued with just the actual being able to manifest the vegetable, and it never
yeah.
makes it. Yeah.
I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah.
You just get happy
not,
that something growing.
Right, right. And I'm not going to tell you I wasn't that way in the beginning. That's why I'm trying to steer you away from that mistake, is because I was growing like fennel and all
yeah.
kind of stuff just to see if I could grow it, and then I didn't know how to use it, or I didn't eat it, or whatever, whatever. And people grow all these herbs, and they don't use the herbs. So
yeah.
eat what you grow, grow what you eat type thing. But a kitchen garden is defined as a small garden situated close to the kitchen, and we definitely want you to be able to use what you're growing in your kitchen. So that's pretty much kitchen in a nutshell, kitchen garden. And the term came because you might have a guy that's growing corn to sell it, or watermelons mm-hmm. to sell it, and he got acres and acres and acres of watermelons or acres and acres of corn, but usually he has a garden that he eats off of close up to his house. And that's
mm-hmm.
what was always termed as the kitchen garden.
Gotcha.
So that's the thing behind kitchen gardening. Now, of course, they do have stuff that you can buy, like arrow gardens and bubble ponics and stuff like that
yeah.
grows in the kitchen, on the kitchen counter type stuff. But that's just going to allow you to grow maybe some basil or some, you know, herbs and stuff like that you can kind of cut while you're cooking. And those, you know, those grown under lights and water, hydroponic systems and stuff like that.
Do you recommend that? So if you're in a place where you don't have a lot of access to, maybe you don't have a lot of windows, you don't have a lot of access to sunlight, would you recommend people using those methods, the growing under, you know, those specialty type of lights?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely could work. And, you know, any time that you can introduce, you know, fresh-grown stuff or things of that nature into your cooking is great. So, yeah, I definitely would. And I would say, you know, you could buy these types of systems.
Great. That was a question from the chat room about that. Great. And can you talk a little bit about growing the vegetables and the different herbs in the bag? I know that you definitely have talked about this before, and also a little bit about your magic grow ring, because I know a lot of people here are familiar with that as well.
Okay, so growing out the bag is one way that works really good, and it's like a no-fuss type of thing. Where you can go, like I say, they sell the compost in the bags at the Home Depots and stuff like that. So you get the bag and you situate the bag, like when you find out where you're going to grow your garden at or whatever, you situate the bag like a pillow. So you picture a pillow, laying a pillow down, like you're going to lay on the pillow. And you lay that down on the ground. And you can make cuts in that bag, like square cut, cross cuts in the bag. And then you can plant your plant directly down in the bag, or you could put the seed down in that bag and water that bag on the regular, and the vegetable will grow right out of that bag. And because that bag is a bag of compost, it's already so nutritionally rich.
Yeah.
That it will sustain the growth of that vegetable. But the only thing, like if you're doing tomatoes, you're going to need like a something for the tomato to crawl up, like
mm-hmm.
a trellis or something like that. Yeah, you're going to need like a trellis or something like that for the thing to crawl up. Or if you're doing cucumbers or stuff like that, you need it to have something to crawl up. But just like for your herbs and your basic stuff like that, it'll grow right out of that bag for the whole season. And you don't have to dig nothing or nothing. You just set the bag down. And then if you really want to disguise it, put a lot of pine needles over it or mulch over it or something like that, and people won't even know that it's growing out of the bag.
Ah, cool. Okay.
Yeah, they won't even know that it's growing out of a bag. And like I do a garden at a daycare, at a local daycare here in Atlanta. And the area that I had to put it in had a, like a big tree stumps and stuff like that where we couldn't really dig. So we just put the bag down and cut the holes in and put the plants down in the bag and then covered it up with mulch. And everybody thinks that it's growing out of the ground, but
wow.
It's growing out of the bag.
That's so cool. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and
wow.
You can see examples of that garden in the bag on the YouTube channel if you look up any of my youth gardening stuff, because I'm dealing with, like, preschoolers who they can go out in the garden and do certain things, but they can't really dig and do all this stuff.
Yeah.
So that was an easy way for them to experience the garden right there where they were at. But, yeah, the garden in the bag is a great method. Very easy.
You know, it's funny. How did you, because you said at first that when you was talking about your experience growing up as a child, you didn't really like to be out there on the farm doing
right.
garden. How did you make it fun? How do you make it fun for children so that they enjoy it? Like, how did you do that? What did you do differently to get children to enjoy gardening?
Well, I kind of allowed them to see the process from the very beginning of it, like showing them the actual pack of seeds and getting them familiar with what the tomato looked like and this and that. But I also made a little workbook, coloring book type thing. And I had, I had the characters like Mr. Tomato, Mrs. Pepper, Mrs. Compost, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, like, nowadays they got little cartoons and stuff. VeggieTales is one.
Definitely.
Christian-based cartoon, and all the characters are vegetables. So, just kind of characterizing the vegetable and letting them see the vegetable, and I would bring in the vegetables and let them touch them and hold them and, you know, encourage them to eat vegetables and stuff like that, and then take them out. And most kids like to play in the dirt. Growing up, you know, you would make mud pies and stuff like that. So most kids like to play in the dirt, so you let them kind of play in the dirt and compost and, you know, get them introduced to that kind of stuff. And then I would have them, like, ask your mom to give you some banana peels and bring the banana peels next week. Get the coffee grinds, bring the coffee grinds next week and let them put them into the garden and stuff like that. Because you can actually take the banana peel and chop it up into small pieces and dig it into the garden, and it'll break down actually into the garden. You can use that too. You can put coffee grinds directly into the garden. I would buy bags of Epsom salt and let them just throw the Epsom salt out in the garden and stuff like that. So we did like little to just let them actually do something without, you know, holding them back from it. Let them do something and keep it in, you know, 20-minute increments where they're not outside for no hour or 2 hours.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is, I remember having that experience of being, I didn't have to so much go out and do anything with the dirt, but I did have to pick the corn, and I had to pick the peas, and I had, you know, I remember doing that, and I remember sometimes spending hours outside, and, you know, I would be like, okay, Granny, I didn't had enough of this. I haven't had enough of this now, you know, so I definitely understand, yeah.
you gotta snap the peas and do all of that kind of work, so you didn't get to enjoy none of the digging in the soil or the, you know.
I wasn't trying to be in the dirt. I definitely wasn't trying to be in the dirt at that point, but now I get it. But when I was a kid, I was like, nah, keep all the dirt and the worms and everything away from me.
But
I think this is awesome.
Yeah, we let them do the worm thing, and, you know, if it's 10 of them, usually 4 of them going to love the worm. One of them going to try to eat the worm.
The other five
of them going to be scared of the worm. So, you know, you let them see what the worm is and tell them what the worm does and why it's important, you know, why you should be happy when you see a worm in your garden and that kind of stuff. So just, you know, just trying to plant that seed in the youth and start it with the young people so that maybe, you know, one day it'll click on them, you know. And it also kind of provokes their parents to jealousy, because if they see their child doing
the kid can do it better than they can do it.
And, you know, it's at a daycare, so when they walk into the daycare to drop their kids off, they see the garden right there every day. And then the kid can chime in and say, yeah, look, that's what we did and this and that and da, 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 da. So, kind of a double-edged sword, you know, teach the children and provoke the parents to jealousy, because, you know, a lot of times adults, you can't tell them nothing.
Right. Then it becomes a little seed of competition. Like, I need to try to, you know, learn how to grow a cucumber because my 7-year-old can do it. Absolutely.
Right.
Wow, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. I definitely want to encourage everybody to go ahead and get on the line. And I wanted to ask you, Mr. Anderson, just because of the different, you know, we're kind of shifting in the seasons. We're getting into the fall time, although the weather in Chicago isn't really representing that because it's like 80 degrees. And then now today it's getting colder. So we kind of going through, you know, 20 degree shifts and 30 degree shifts. So I wanted to ask you about weather. And I also wanted to ask you about the basically the effect that the moon cycles have on growing and planting things. And these shifts in the weather as well, because I think, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you all kind of had a real interesting season with weather, and I know up in the Midwest, everything has been a little off in that sense. You know, the summer got hot at one point, but then it was basically we had a fairly cool summer, and then we had like 1 month of really hot weather, and now, like I said, we're having 80-degree days in October. So how do you kind of handle that, and then how do the moon phases and moon cycles kind of affect your growing and your planting and what you should be doing?
Okay. So the fall season, like you say, sometimes it's been a little crazy. But like you being in Chicago, it would facilitate the area that you live in, would facilitate the zone that you live in. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the map of the United States or North America, they have it broken down into zones. And the further up north would, like, upper Michigan would be like zone 1 or zone 2 and 3, and then as you move down into the, you know, Chicago area. You will be getting into zone 4 and 5 as you move more south, you know, zone 6, 7 in Georgia, 8 down into the Florida area, 9 deep down Florida, deep down Texas type thing like that. So the zones is, and these zones, what these zones do is they take in that area, they take the average time, like they would take 10 years in a row and chart the weather on when the first frost came. So, like, you kind of live in Chicago or whatever, you know that right around November time is when y'all going to get y'all first 32 degree weather or your first snowfall. So 10 years in a row, they take that and they say, okay, it happened November 1st. I don't know when. I'm just giving you a you know, trying to help you understand it. So, like they say, in 1990, the first frost was November 1st. 1991, it happened on the 3rd. 1992, it happened around the 5th. 1994, it happened on the 1st.
Mm-hmm.
1995, it happened on the 1st again. 1996, it happened on the 3rd. So they take an average date of when that happened, and maybe November the 2nd is the average. So they would say the frost, the first frost date for this particular area, this zone, is November the 1st. And then the last frost date, like, okay, you didn't have no more frost after April the 2nd for 1991.
Right.
So, you know, the last time that it got below 32 degrees, it happened April the 2nd, and the next year happened April the 1st.
So it's an average of those dates?
Yeah, it's an average of those dates. So they give you the first frost date when you can expect the temperature to go below 32 degrees, and then they give you the last frost date when you can expect the temperature not to go below 32 degrees again for the rest of the year. So they give you the first frost date and the last frost date. So based on those dates, you know when the last frost date. I mean, you could put your plants out after this date without fear of the temperature dropping below 32 degrees.
Okay.
And then when you plant in the fall, you want to time it so that your plants will be done before November 1st or whenever the last frost date is, because that's when the temperature is about to drop below 32 degrees. So when you start gardening, you learn them 2 dates. But you time it. So now the fall is coming, right? So the fall came September 21st. So you got 90 days until you get the winter come, which is December 21st. And that's just based on the Gregorian calendar. So,
right.
You got 90 days from September 21st to December 21st, roughly 90 days, 3 months. So you want to plant stuff that matures in like 60 days so that you could plant it pre-adventure. You planted it in September or late August so that it would be up to a plant in September and then let it ride out. But the thing about the fall is that you know in the fall, you're gonna have cool nights and moderate days, like 60 to 70 degree days.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your days are gonna be shorter. So you're not gonna have as much sunlight. So in the fall, you're not gonna be planting fruiting vegetables like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, watermelons, stuff like that to yield fruit, because it needs 8 to 10 hours worth of sun, and you're just not getting that much sun in the fall. So, and these type of plants don't hold up to them cool nights.
Right.
You know, they won't deal with no 50 and 40 degree nights. So you have Yeah, you have to plant vegetables that deal with that characteristic, and most of your cold vegetables, like your cabbages and your broccoli, cabbage, Chinese cabbage, snow peas, snap peas, garlic, onions, things like that will grow good in the fall. So this is why
okay.
This is when you transition from the tomatoes and the peppers and the eggplants and the okra, you that stuff is dying off now. And then the new stuff that you plant is going to be your fall vegetables. You know, like your turnip greens, your collard greens, your mustard greens, your kale, your broccoli, your cauliflower, all of those things. Because they will actually hold up to cold weather. And they will, once they become mature, they will even deal with a frost. They can handle a frost. Because what they do, and that actually makes them sweeter when they get the frost, is because when the frost hits them, they retain their sugars, and they use their sugars to keep themselves alive, and the sugars are more prominent in the plant. So that's why when people get collard greens, they pick them after the first frost, because that's when they're sweet.
Okay.
That's when they're sweetest, because they're trying to keep themselves alive, so they pull in all their sugars to keep themselves alive, and that makes them really sweet. So the fall vegetables are, like I said, cold crops. And when I say cold, I mean C-O-L-E, cold.
Cold crops,
and,
okay.
Yeah, not C-O-L-D, like the weather cold or the
right,
temperature.
Cold, yeah, yeah.
But like cold, C-O-L-E, and that's why when you eat coleslaw is not necessarily just cabbage. It's anything that's in the cold family. A lot of people think it's called coleslaw, like the temperature coleslaw.
Cold, yeah.
because you eat it cold. But it's actually called coleslaw, C-O-L-E, because it uses the type of plant that's in the kale family. You can make, you know, you probably done ate it before, broccoli.
Yes,
salt.
Yeah,
they take the stalks of the broccoli and spread them up and make slaw out of that, which is the broccoli is in the kale family. Cabbage is in the kale family. So the kale crops is what you use for the fall. Now, as far as the moon on your planting and stuff like that, the moon facilitates many things, but the skinny on it is that the waxing moon, or when the moon is going from small to big, because the moon starts out with a slither, then it goes to a perfect half 7 days after that. Then 7 days after that, it goes to full, which is the 14th day after the first slither. It goes to full, which is the full moon. So when it's going from small to big, that's called the waxing moon. And then after the full moon, it starts decreasing itself, and then it go half on the other side. Then it go down to the slither on the other side 28 days later. So the moon moves in perfect sevens. The perfect half is 7 days. The full moon is 14 days. Then after the full moon, go down to the other half, is 21 days. Then after that to the next slither is 28 days. And then it has a dark time, which would either be 1 day or 1.5 days. And some people call that dark moon the new moon. But it would approximately be 29.5 days in the moon cycle. So the moon, when it's waxing, is when you plant your above-ground crop. So that means stuff that grows above ground that you're going to eat, like tomatoes, peppers, aubergine eggplants, cucumbers, beans, stuff that's going to be above ground. And the reason that is because when the moon, it pulls on the tides of the earth or the water and keeps the earth balanced, but it's also like aqueducts and stuff up underneath the earth. And the moon pulls on those as well. But what you're above the ground crops, the roots are taking moisture up into the plant that's above the ground. And when the moon is at growing to its fullest, it has more of a connection to that above ground crop because it's pulling that water that's in that plant. So the plant is being responsive. The plant is being responsive to the water connection between the moon and the plant. And then when the moon is going down, it's kind of releasing the water that it just pulled, or the tide or the flow that is pulling on the earth, and it's working more underground. So you put your root crops in on the waning moon. So you put in like your potatoes, your onions, your sweet potatoes, your garlic, your stuff that grow under, your horseradish, your beets, stuff that grow underground. You put that in on the waning moon. So above the ground crops on the waxing moon and underground crops or the provisions on the waning moon. And then the moon sets the season. It tells you the season because the moon works in those 30-day phases. So you know each season has three moons associated with it. So you can set the season by these moons. Because a moon usually go 360 days a year, is like a lunar calendar. But it falls short of 360 days for the real mathematician. It rounds out to about 354, 356, something like that. But ideally 360 days, which is divisible into the four seasons, giving you 90 days in each season. But the solar, on the other hand, is at 365 days, and it, you know, it doesn't divide it up into perfect seasons. So the moon actually sets the season, and the sun knows it's going down. So you follow, the almanac tends to follow the moon or the lunar phases to help you grow and to divide your seasons up versus the sun. So that's why the moon is, you know, has like so much significance when it comes to growing, because it does the thing with the water and the tides and, you know, the liquid and all of that. Like most babies are born on a full moon because the first thing that happened before a child come into the world, to the mother, what happens? Something happens to the water, and they
water breaks.
Yeah, because the moon is pulling on that water, and the water breaks. But yeah, so the moon has a big influence with the liquid connection. Now, humans consist of over 70% water. That's why they say that man act all crazy or whatever on the full moon.
Right, yeah.
But they just don't want you to, they want you to program you to think that you're going to be acting crazy or whatever, but you at your most spiritual awakening or the height of your connection with the cosmos when the moon is full, because it has more of a pull on the liquid that's in your body.
Wow.
It's pulling the ocean and the tides and all of that, and you 70% water, so you can't say that it's not affecting.
It's not pulling you,
the water that's in you. So that's the significance of the moon and how it relates to, you know, gardening and how you would use it, you know.
How does the go ahead.
No, no, go ahead.
How does the dark moon or the new moon, how does that fit into those phases? Is that included in the waxing moon? Like, is that a time you would plant those same crops during there?
Like, usually my thing with the dark moon is I use that as a type of a cleaning phase, or, you know, getting the trash out of the garden, weeding, pulling things out of that. So I kind of treat that as a, I won't say a void day, but like a neutral day where I do more cleansing of the garden, letting the gardener kind of relax for that time or whatever. That's the way I treat it. And, you know, scriptures and things of that nature, when they deal with the new moon, they usually cleanse the temple during the new moon times and open the gates and do different things like that. So I use it more of as a logistical phase to get me from one cycle to the next cycle.
Beautiful. Wow. So much information. This is great, Mr. Anderson, and everybody is really enjoying this share. I know I got to get to the callers, and so if you are ready, I think we can definitely start taking some calls from the listeners, because everybody is sending me questions, so
okay,
you
okay.
all can get on the
line.
I love it.
Yeah, that'd
yes.
be great. So
definitely get on the line.
Did you want to do the posted ones first? Or
yes, I'm gonna get to those
okay.
first, definitely. So, because I know these people have been waiting for me to get to their questions, and everyone
right.
else, get on the line 646-652-2711 and press 1 for your questions with the official remix gardener, Mr. Anderson, and we are live in the remix. And also, I just want to remind everybody about Self Invested and the Mastermind classes that are going on this weekend on Saturday. I don't have the bell to ring for Self Invested, but everyone knows we can kind of hear Miss Blue's bell in our heads. So just want to remind everyone about that. Let me see. The first question that we got, let's look over here on our Facebook page, was from Happy Energy, who said that she is a beginner at gardening and she's interested in making a earth box. When is the best time to create a earth box?
I would say around the full moon. And the earth box, I guess she would be kind of referring to like a raised bed where you're making a box and then filling the box with soil. I would gather that that's what she's meaning by earth box. So that would be an above ground type situation. And not that it's directly affecting the you know, the currents or anything like that. It's just a rule of thumb. When you're doing things above the ground, you do them, you know, as the moon is increasing to the full moon. So I would say anytime from the new moon to the full moon, build your earth box.
Great. Thank you. And Happy, you definitely can call in if you're not already on the line. You can call in to get some further questions. All right. I have another question that is from Tammy. And Tammy says, I want to start an herb garden but don't know where to begin. I make my own herbal infusion oils, and I love lavender and calendula. Can I grow these herbs in my garden, and when is the optimal time to plant these herbs?
Okay, yeah, she can definitely grow those in her garden. The calendula may be what she's saying, a flower, calendula or calaloo, I don't know exactly which one it is, but the lavender, you could start it from a seed, but it's kind of fussy to start from a seed. Usually I would find like a Ace Hardware or Lowe's or somewhere like that and buy the lavender plant. But the lavender is a perennial, so you can put the lavender out anytime you can find it. But if you are going to put it out in the fall, I would say mulch it heavily. And when I say mulch, I mean like pine needles or hay straw or something like that all around the herb to kind of protect the roots from getting frozen. But the plant will last through the winter and come back in the spring because it is a perennial as far as the lavender go. So if you can find a lavender plant at your garden center or anything, you could go ahead and plant that or mulch it very heavily in this fall season so that by the time winter comes, its roots will be established and kind of deep, and then it'll last through the winter. But if not, you could get some lavender seeds and try to start them in a pot indoors and let them grow like on the windowsill or where your house plants grow from a seed, and then let them stay in the house throughout the winter because it's just going to be foliage at the beginning, which is just leaves. Let them grow in the house throughout the winter, and then come spring, take them out and put them in the garden or in a pot outside.
Great. And, Tammy, you can definitely call in if you have anything else you want to ask, 646-652-2711. I'm going to go ahead and go to the line. Calling in, this looks like from a Skype caller. You are live on The Remix. Who is on the line, and where are you calling from?
Well, this is Queen Mother Goddess Opulence, and I'm glad you came to me because I'm fading, but I wanted to put some questions up there. If I have to listen to the archives, I'll be good. Mr. Anderson, I am enjoying the information that you are bringing forward. This is truly a blessing.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I thank you. I'm just going to put some questions out there, and I might be here to answer them. I might respond, and I might not. But greenhouses. Opposed to a hoop house, plastic versus grass. I'm in Alabama. Growing indoors, starting the seeds indoors with those electric seed starters and the lights. They tend to grow thin and long fast, I'm having a problem with that, and there was something else that has gone. So I'll listen for your.
Okay. So the second question, I'll answer it first. When you starting your seeds indoors and you're using that light and your plants are growing long, they call that leggy. Your plants are getting to be leggy, and what's happening is your light is not close enough to the plant because it's reaching for the light. When it gets leggy like that, it's reaching for the light. So you actually need to set up the light to where you can get 2 to 4 inches away from the seedling where it won't burn it, but the seedling doesn't have to reach so far for the light, and it'll stay, you know, it won't get that long stemmy thing and try to reach out for that light. That's what's happening, is reaching for the light. So you need to figure out how to get the light closer. Usually what people do is get them lights and they have them on some type of thing where they can have a chain and they can lower the length of chain on some hooks. And as the plant grows taller, you can move the light up so that it doesn't burn the plant. But, yeah, so it's the positioning of your light that's causing that legginess. And also, if you deal with eggs, you can make some eggshell water and this is going to smell a little bit. So use a have a well-ventilated area and don't use it every day. But give them a shot of the eggshell water, and that kind of strengthens them so that if they get leggy, their roots, that long stem that's getting leggy will kind of be strong to hold itself up a little bit more once it gets leggy, so you don't have to throw it away. And it can kind of recover after you reposition the light and get it in a better light. You hit it with some eggshell water, which is potassium. Or if you don't do eggs, you could probably, what else could give you some potassium? Potassium water. You probably could usually eggshell, or you could use some bone meal. Use some bone meal, like sprinkle a little bone meal on them, and that'll help it too once it get in that leggy phase. So that's something you can do. Now, as far as greenhouses versus hoop houses, greenhouses are probably 10 times more expensive than a hoop house. A hoop house is usually, from what I understand with the hoop houses that I've been dealt with and stuff, is where you just take some PVC pipe and put it on one end and, you know, bend it to where it don't bend too much and fasten it on the other end and do that in a succession, 5, 6, however long you want it to be, and then take that clear plastic and pull it over there so it looked like you got hula hoops sticking up out the ground with plastic over the top of them. And basically all that's doing is keeping the frost off of the plant. You're not introducing any heat other than the heat that's being trapped, but because it's just plastic and you don't have a really way to seal it airtight, you're not holding in a lot of heat to get you through the cold like that. So it's an inexpensive way to, like, either extend the season or allow you to start earlier in the spring with, like, seedlings and stuff outside. I've seen people use hoop houses where they take terracotta or bricks and different things of that nature and let the bricks get a lot of sunlight, and then at night they will put the bricks or the terracotta and stuff in the hoop house, and it will, you know, give off heat. It will radiate heat into their hoop house and keep tomatoes above a certain temperature so they can try to prolong their tomatoes into, like, late November, because once you get some nice tomatoes, if you could still get nice tomatoes late into November, early December, you could jack the price up on these tomatoes and sell them for a good price. Or you just, you know the difference between a tomato that you grow versus a tomato that's store-bought, and you just got to have that taste as long as you can have it. So you try to prolong the production of those tomatoes as long as you can. I've made it probably to late November, early December, and the only reason I was able to do that, and they were substantially smaller. I didn't have no hoop house or nothing, but my dryer vent was, when you use your washer and your dryer in your house, it usually has an exhaust vent where it vents out somewhere outside somewhere.
Right.
And this particular place where I was at, it vented out in the back by the door that led into the basement, and I had a tomato plant right there by the door. And because this dryer was venting out that heat, it was keeping that plant alive because it was warming it up and not letting it get below that temperature. And I was able to have just that one particular plant lasted me until about December, and I, you know, still was able to get a few tomatoes. Now I had to cut it off and let it ripen, and inside it had got to a blush. because of lack of sunlight. It didn't all the way ripen on there, but it made it into December, and I was able to have, like, you know, some garden tomatoes that late. But that's why a lot of people use the hoop house. It's inexpensive, and you can do different things to try to prolong this. Now, a greenhouse, on the other hand, is very expensive. It's made out of glass usually, or, you know, sometimes they use plexiglass or different things of that nature. But it has, like, window panes usually that can open and close. And when it's closed, it can trap in a lot of heat. It usually has some kind of fan system or exhaust system hooked to it. I mean, they go, they range from, you know, very basic to very intricate. But the greenhouse, you know, is expensive, and it can get very expensive on, you know, depending on how advanced, how many accessories you want to add to it and different things of that nature. But the biggest difference I see is that you can really control the environment in a greenhouse versus the hoop house. And the investment of one to the other is a big difference, too.
Very, very interesting. I have a lot of clay shards around, which I work with clay, and I've just kind of been putting pieces that, you know, that broke and I didn't like, whatever. They're scattered around, and now I know what to do with them. I have some window frames that also that I'm going to use to put my tomatoes behind on the south side. Mm-hmm. That the windows open and close. They, you know, I bought them for like $5-$10 a piece.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that you could do with those window frames. You can build something what they call a cold frame. It's called a cold frame. And I've seen people do this. It's a popular technique where you get like some regular wood, like some 2x6s or whatever, as much as you can get, and you build up a box, like you say, and then you put the window panes on top of that box that you built to let the sunlight in. And in that cold frame, you could take electrical blankets, like heating blankets, warming blankets, or heating tubes or whatever, and run, you know, like electric into that cold frame and plug it in at night, and it'll heat that cold frame up, and then in the morning time, you know, because you got the window pane, you're letting sunlight in, and then the heat that you trapped all throughout the night because you've been using this electrical source, you lift that window pane up and let that heat out.
I love it, and the 2x4s are in a pile waiting for me to do something with them. So, yes, indeed, I think.
Yeah. So do you a little research on the cold frame. And you'll find all kind of pictures and images and things of that nature, and probably some of your garden books got it in there as well. But if you got window sills, window panes, and you got the 2x4s, you're a perfect candidate for a cold frame.
All right. One more thing. I may have a couple more things, but I bought a greenhouse with it's a frame that has to be put together. A little complicated at like Big Lots, and it has a plastic cover that once it's you know, done. What is your feeling on those?
I think I know what you're talking about. You can like unzip it and take
right.
the plastic off
exactly.
and all of that.
Yeah.
Those are good. I like them especially for starting seedlings and things of that nature. Like, say you could early March. What particular area are you in, by the way? What zone you in?
I'm in Alabama.
Central Alabama. Okay. So you about the same as Georgia 6, Zone 6, Zone 7. You could actually use that to get a head start on the spring for starting your stuff. So you could put it outside in early March and let it get direct sunlight, and that'll stop that leggy problem that you're having. And that plastic will protect it from the cold night and all of that. But I'm not against plastic. It sounds like that's what you kind of asked me, plastic versus glass. Plastic is fine. I don't have no problem with the plastic. It doesn't seem to distort the UV rays or anything like that when it comes to those deals, because I've seen them grow pretty good in those type of environments. So I don't think that plastic is affecting it at all. Maybe some people say that plastic breaks down and gives off some kind of gas, but I think plants are even stronger than humans when it comes to exposure to things like that. They have the ability to only breathe in the stuff that they need and want, versus us, we have to breathe in everything that's around us.
Well, you are a wealth of knowledge, and you woke me up.
Wow, thank you.
I thank you. I thank you so much. Yeah, you feel me. You feel me good. Thank you.
So do me a favor then. Either go to my YouTube channel and subscribe there, go to my website and sign up for my newsletter, do, you know, something to kind of keep in touch with me and let me know that you out there to keep me motivated, because I haven't been as active with my videos and my emails and stuff like that. So, you know, you could be fertilizing to me, you know, keep me questions going, because when you go to sign up for my newsletter, it will allow you to ask me questions. And the questions that you ask me, when I answer them, they automatically get shared with the rest of my email list. So, you know, if I helped you, help me in that way.
Oh, it shall be done. I have done that, and then I stopped getting stuff from you now that I think about it.
Yeah. So don't stop.
I will do it again. No problem. I'll be there soon.
Yeah, because that helps me stay with the virtual world or whatever, because, I mean, I won't say that I become disenchanted, but at times with the Facebook and all of that kind of stuff, I mean, I'm a gardener, really. So that stuff right there, sometimes it kind of, I really could, to be honest with you, sometimes do without it.
I hear you.
If I'm not getting a whole lot of activity and different things like that and people really interacting with me, I tend to, of late, kind of get more into the real world, like I told Esther in the beginning, you know, more practical application and actually dealing with the garden and going out there planting gardens and doing the stuff, and instead of the, you know, the Facebook gardener or the Farmerville type of thing, you know. So, but
if you give me that information, I've got a pen and paper, and so I can do
okay.
it.
So the website is I grow, you grow, IGROWUGROW.
Hey, wait. I, okay.
Yeah, I, indigo, like I as in
okay.
indigo, and then GROW.
Okay.
The word U as in uniform, U, GROW, I grow, you grow.
Okay.
Right? Because if I grow, you grow. Right, and then .com or .biz. I had been using .biz because somebody had the .com, but guess what? They don't have it no more.
They
don't have it no more.
I love it.
Good.
Yeah. So now you can go .com or .biz. I grow, you grow. .com, I grow, you grow. .biz. So go to there, and then it's got the newsletter. It's got a link to the YouTube page and all of that. So go to the newsletter, click to sign up for that, or, you know, the fan page or something like that to get to the questions. And then it'll ask you for questions and stuff like that. Or go to the YouTube page and, you know, do something on the YouTube page, but it's a plethora of videos up on that YouTube page. I mean, composting, youth gardening, taking the vegetable into the kitchen, showing you how I cook it, all that type of stuff.
Wonderful. I have another question.
Uh-huh.
It's all right, Esther.
Yes, it is. It definitely is. Go ahead.
Today, I got a real blessing. I get blessings every day. We all do. I recognize it and appreciate it. I was driving down the same country road that I drive down when I go to town, because I live out in the country. And I looked to my right, and I saw these red lilies. And I stopped, and I turned around, actually, because I had gone past, and I went down to this little, I went to the country store owner. And I said, may I? He said, what are they? I told him, they're for dreaming. He said, I'm too old for dreaming. I said, can I have them or buy them? He said, have them. I went into town, bought me a shovel while I was doing my other errands and came back. And now I got so many. I got so many of these lilies, these spider lilies. I mean, whoa. Any suggestion? And I got a lot of other things to do besides gardening between now and Wednesday. I got to get ready for art show. What can I do with them to make sure that they are taken care of between now and me getting them in the ground? Or will they be all right, you know?
So how do you have them right now as it stands? Are they in pots right now?
I took the ones that still had the lilies on them. I put them in some water, and I got four buckets, big buckets.
Okay, they in water right now, and you need to know what to do to them before you put them in the ground, or how long will they last?
How long are they going to last? And then I got about five or six baggies, plastic bags full of bulbs, of the bulbs that don't have the flowers attached to them.
Okay, so with the bulbs, you could get some newspaper if you got a basement or a pole barn or a dry, cool place with the bulbs. You could take the bulbs and lay them out on the newspaper and let them dry out. And then plant them in the winter. You in Alabama, yeah, you could plant them in the winter, December sometime like that, and they'll come up in the spring. But you need to kind of let them dry out a little bit if you ain't going to put them in the ground right away. The bulbs will last if you dry them out. Now, the lilies that's in the water, they like the water. They'll do good in the water, but you got to keep refreshing that water about every 3 to 4 days if you want to leave them in that water. Because they'll be kind of like an ivy that you know how you used to start an ivy in a jar of water in the windowsill. But that water get a little scummy or have a little scum on it or something like that, and you just refresh the water. You can refresh that bucket of water like that. I'd say if you 2 weeks maybe stretching it or whatever, but definitely you want to try to get them in the ground. But if you keep refreshing that water, I'd give you about 2 weeks.
That's enough time.
Yeah, you can get
That's good. In fact, more time than I need. Thank you. It has been a true pleasure receiving your wisdom. True pleasure. I see my thumb getting a little green.
Right on. Thank you very much. That's what it's all about.
Thank you. Peace.
Thank you. Peace.
All right. Let's go to the next caller calling in from area code 786. 786, you are live on the remix. Who is on the line and where are you calling from? 786, we can't hear you. Okay, I'm going to come back to 786. All right, next caller calling in from area code 614. 614, you are live on The Remix. Who's on the line and where are you calling from?
Greetings, I'm Andrea calling from Ohio.
Hi, Andrea, how are you?
Hello,
yes, we can hear you.
Greetings, Mr. Anderson and Esther, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, you, Mr. Anderson, have inspired me. This is my first year doing a garden. So, I did watermelon. I only got one.
Okay.
And I want to do, like, a lot next year. So, I got raised bed gardens. It's they're 2 feet deep, like, height, and, like, four feet long width.
Okay.
So is that the right environment to? Because I only got one watermelon this year.
Okay, so when you did your watermelon this time, did you get a lot of vine? Did you get a lot of vine?
Yeah.
Like a lot, yeah, you got a lot of vine, but you didn't get much flowers on there. Because out of the flower usually comes the melon. So. What type of soil do you have in the bed that you made?
Okay, well, because I had got one bed, I got some compost from somebody around here. And
mm-hmm.
the other bed, I actually bought the organic thing from Lowe's, the
mm-hmm.
organic soil from Lowe's.
Okay, okay.
So that's the one that they were growing in.
So the one that you bought the Lowe's, you got the one watermelon from, right?
Yes. Well, that's where all the watermelons were planted in that.
Okay.
One.
Okay. So what type of watermelon did you plant? Do you remember?
I have a sugar baby.
Sugar baby. Okay.
Yeah, that's it came out good.
Okay, yeah. That's the one.
I just need more of them boys.
Okay, that's
yes.
the one you should stick with. For
stick
that
with the sugar baby.
Start. Yeah.
Okay,
but,
hold on. I'm got my ideas. I did sugar babies, and I have this other one right here. What is this? No, that's not strong. I'm sorry. I'm looking. Okay. I got
seeds
right here. Oh, okay. This one was crimson sweet. I don't think I got any. I had one of that one, but it didn't come out right.
That's a big watermelon, though, right?
Yeah, it kind of got
supposed to be a big one. Okay.
Yeah.
So. This is usually what happens with watermelons. They like a sandy type of soil, and they like a very rich environment. And to encourage a lot of flowers, you need more potassium and phosphorus. So
mm-hmm.
next season or next spring, what you want to do, and in the bed that you're going to grow them in, you probably had it flat. You probably had the soil flat, like even, all the way throughout the bed, right?
Yeah, because I had some radishes in there too.
Okay, so what you got to do is, like, within that box, if it's 2x4, by how wide is it, like, from the front to the back?
Two feet? Yeah, 2 feet.
Okay, so... So what you want to do is make up these mounds or these hills. You want to create these hills
mm-hmm.
Within the box. You want maybe three or four hills. And when I say hills, so you're going to get more compost that is in there right now. It's level. But you want to create these hills. And
okay.
You want to incorporating those hills. When you mix the new compost to make these hills, you want to put Epsom salt in with the compost or the soil that you're dealing with, and you
mm-hmm.
want to put bone meal in with the soil that you're dealing with. And if you can get something called green sand, G-R-E-E-N,
mm-hmm.
green sand. So you want Epsom salt, bone meal, and green sand. And you want to mix this in with some compost and make like a hill, and then plant the watermelon seeds in that hill. And what's going to happen is they're going to grow out of that hill and then kind of drape down that hill and start growing again. But the reason why you want that hill is because you want it to be rich, and the roots of a watermelon is not very strong, and they don't go deep into the soil. So by making that hill, that soil is kind of already broke up and not getting matted down, and it'll let the roots grow much deeper, and it'll suck up that bone meal, green sand, and Epsom salt, which is going to encourage the plant to produce more flowers. And the more flowers that you have, the more opportunity for watermelon or fruit that you have. That's why it's called the fruit of the womb, because out of the flower comes the fruit. Out of the flower comes the fruit. So you want to encourage as much flowering as you can get. You want to encourage as much flowering as you can get. So that should help your watermelon production there.
So stick with, okay, do all that, and you say just stick with the sugar babies. Don't mess with the crimson.
Yeah, because them big ones, man, they for one, you don't have that much space to be dealing with that.
Okay.
And then for two, like you say, you've already tasted the sugar baby, and it's good, and it's, you put it in your refrigerator. People call them refrigerator melons and all of that, and I've had success with the sugar baby watermelon too. And then also, if you want, like, do a side experiment, you got any kind of hill or anything around where you're growing at?
No.
A natural slope or a hill or anything like that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. But watermelons grow good out the bag. They grow good out the bag. So, like, out the compost bag. So you can just buy a bag of compost, lay it down like a pillow, cut a slit in it, and plant your watermelon seeds in that and let it grow out of the bag. But the reason why I say hill, because it needs to run. If you let it run, like run, it'll run. When I say run, I mean it'll, you know how a watermelon grows.
Because I had to put it up I let it run up the little wire.
Yeah. Now, when you let it run up the wire like that, if you do get a watermelon, you need to make a sling for it.
Yep, I got the sling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, make a sling for the watermelon because it's going to get heavy. So, yeah, you can let it grow up the thing. You can let it grow up the thing, up the trellis and all of that, but you need the sling. Let it, you know, sling the watermelon once you get it. But, yeah, that's a good way. So, you know, you could do it out the bag.
But out the bag, they're just going to run all over the ground.
Yeah, unless you situate the bag up next to something and train the thing to go up wherever you got. You know what I mean? Yeah.
All right. Well, I got those. And, okay, now I have arugula going now. Are they going to do okay?
Arugula will do well in the cool weather. Arugula does do well in the cool weather. Matter of fact, arugula is strongly gaining as my favorite plant and vegetable right now as far as taste.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that arugula is something special, or rocket. They call it rocket. But, yeah, I mean, it.
You said rocket.
Rocket, yeah, they call it rocket. The English term for it, like an eggplant is called an aubergine, a cucumber is called a gherkin, arugula is called rocket, squash is called marrow, zucchini is called courgette.
Goodness gracious, I ain't even know these names.
So arugula is rocket. If you look at the pack, it might say it on there. Up underneath the arugula, it might say it on there. But for it to be a lettuce, it's giving off so much flavor, man. I just don't know what to do. I love that arugula. But, yeah, your arugula should do well. What else you got going for the fall?
Okay, well, now I did my turnip greens in the summer, so they had like a white film or something on them.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Like, that's called a powdery mildew. Powdery mildew. Yeah, what you can do to get that off of them, or you can kind of cut the, you can kind of cut it down, and it should kind of start redoing itself. Like, just like give it a good buzz cut. Don't cut it down to the soil, but just kind of cut the top off of it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And then it should start growing itself back, and to prevent the powdery mildew, you could do just plain old baking soda and water. Put a little garlic in the water and let the garlic sit in the water for a while, then put baking soda in there and shake it up and spray it all over the powdery mildew.
Okay. Like powdered garlic or like a
clove of garlic.
Clove.
Yeah, like a clove of garlic into the water. Let it infuse itself into the water.
Okay.
And then take the clove out, or strain it and use the water with a little baking soda in it in a spray bottle and spray it on there.
All right, and that should take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now,
yeah.
I think that's all I have. Okay, well, okay. Now, the soil
mm-hmm.
I bought from Lowe's, is it soil and compost two different things? Because I bought it from Lowe's.
Yeah. The gardening soil is different from compost. But the compost is naturally enriched because of the compensation phase that it went through. And it's usually, if you bought the compost from Lowe's, they got a bag that's like green and white and blue, and it's called composted manure, and it's usually like $1.38 for that bag. It's composted manure. It's very enriched. Now, that garden soil, you spend some good money on that, because that bag was probably about a good $6-$8 or something like that.
Yeah,
that might be, I don't know if that might not be organic, you know what I mean? That might have, because it feeds up to X amount of days or X amount of months or something like that. I don't know what they're using to feed to add the, because it's just soil with stuff added to it. I mean, no discouragement or nothing. Keep that soil in there. But going forward, always buy compost.
Yes, okay, I will.
Yeah, going forward, always buy compost and then add the compost into that and then just, you know, keep it moving. And just chalk that up to
I'm not dealing with that no more.
Being able to do what you did when you did what you did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate you. You inspired me to do my first garden this year, and I pat myself on the back, and I pat you on the back, and I got your newsletters, and thank you so much for everything.
I appreciate you, and keep growing. You know, you're gonna get better and better every year, and you'll find things that grow well for you and things that don't grow well for you, just based on where you're at and your little ecosystem that you create in there. So, you know, make sure you incorporate like a lot of flowers and nasturtiums.
I want to eat it.
Right. So do the nasturtium. Do the nasturtium. It's an edible flower, but it's also pest control.
Yeah, I think I did that. I did nasturtium, but I didn't eat them.
You can eat them.
One day I'm going to graduate to actually doing it in the soil, but I think I'm going to stick with these boxes.
Yeah, the boxes are great. I mean, I'm an advocate of the boxes. The boxes are great. And then you can venture off into the soil, but like you say, you know, you're going to have to test that soil and till it up or whatever. But if you really want to eventually get into the soil, pick you out a spot now
uh-huh.
and start throwing leaves over in that area and just
okay.
let the leaves keep breaking down in that area and just let the leaves pile them up and just keep letting them break down in that area.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And then maybe two seasons or something from now, they'll be done broke down and you'll have an area that worms and stuff done came up and loosened up everything for you and it'll be rich.
Oh, okay. Okay, now, as far as the compost, one more, this is my last question.
Mm-hmm.
What I've been doing, because I have like an abandoned house next door to me, so I just be throwing all my raggedy stuff over there. It's
right.
Like, oh, you know, watermelon peels, anything, any food
mm-hmm.
that I eat, the scraps, I just throw it in there. Is that going to bring some compost to me, or I'm just littering?
I mean, are you putting it in one particular pile?
Yeah, one pile. I go out there, whatever I have left over, I throw it in this one pile.
So
and the cats would probably be getting through it, and neighborhood cats,
yeah.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
But
so what I would say though, if once you throw the scraps over to it, is it any way you could throw a couple piles of leaves on top of it?
Oh, sure, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, so once you throw the scraps over there, just take a little more, you know, attention and throw some leaves over there, and then it'll turn into a compost pile on its own because you need the brown to go with the green.
Okay, all right, yes, I can do some leaves.
Then
on top
you got
of that.
Compost, yeah, leaves
okay,
on top of that.
Okay, now it's just a trash pot.
Yeah, leaves on top of that, and once you get the leaves on top of that, and then you'll start seeing it break down and starting decomposing. Because right now,
okay.
it's probably just liquefying itself right
yeah.
there.
And cats and been over, I know
mm-hmm.
they've been over there. All
right,
well, right. Jeff, thank you for everything. I will take your tips and advice and keep it growing.
All right, thank you very much.
Peace.
Peace, you guys. Peace.
All right, we had two more questions posted on Facebook, so I'm going to tell you what these are. So Dakita asks, peace, Mr. Anderson, I have a peach tree that I'm interested in caring so we can get the most from its harvest. So
mm-hmm.
I guess she's asking for how she can get the most from the peach tree.
Okay, the peach tree, I actually was dealing with a peach tree this year, and it had some fungus on it or something, and I didn't really get a lot of, it had a lot of peaches on it, though. But the number one thing for a peach tree is the pruning of it in the wintertime. So from what I understand about pruning the peach tree is that you want to prune it down and make it short. You want to make it short. So kind of prune the tops of it and prune it down, and once you prune it, from what I understand, the peach tree does really well after a good pruning the next season, because what the peach tree does is it shoots the branches up high so that when the fruit gets on it, it knows that it's going to bend over to the ground. So usually what happens with people is that peaches come on it, they pick the peaches, then they let the tree go the next year, and then branches get too long, and they don't shoot up the next season and get the optimal sunlight and different things that they need to get the heavy peach on and bend themselves over. So the pruning is one thing that they can do to really get a higher yield from their peach tree. And then, they sell stuff that's called growth spikes, but you don't really need to do that. You really should aerate around the base of the tree. And when I say aerate, I mean just like pierce the soil around the tree, aerate, like stabbing the soil around the peach tree. You know, aerate the area real good and then introduce as much compost as you can into the area around the tree that you aerated. And once you introduce as much compost as you can, and I'm talking like do this in the very near future, after the leaves fall off, prune it.
and then aerate it and put the compost around it. And then in the springtime, you should see some high results and some high yield from, you know, that little bit, doing that in the wintertime.
Great. Okay, and then I have another question from Nina. Nina says, I want to start a garden with cucumbers, greens, parsley, and other vegetables and herbs to make juicing more economical. I just purchased a raised garden bed, and I'm clueless where to go from there. How do I start an organic garden?
She purchased the raised bed. That's good. Like we said in the beginning of the show, she needs to figure out the location of where she's going to put it. With the time of the year being that it is now, cucumbers are not going to grow for her at this time unless she lives like in Florida or something like that, deep Florida, or, you know, somewhere way, way south. Cucumbers are done. Parsley, she could actually put in some parsley now. She could put in some greens, maybe some kale, collards, and stuff like that. But she could actually go onto the YouTube page, I Grow, You Grow YouTube page, and try to glean a lot of information that way.
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
she could go on the website, and she could purchase an hour of coaching, and I could coach her through, you know, the I Grow, You Grow methodology and take her from A to Z with some garden coaching, you know, one-on-one, and I'll be able to, you know, take her from where to put it at based on her backyard, you know, what kind of soil, all this, what would be high yield, so forth and so on. But just to get her up and going from that to, you know, from beginning or not knowing where to start to actually manifesting. I mean, I got podcasts up on the website that she can go back and get as much information. We got the remix archives. You got the YouTube. Several free sources, don't get me wrong. But
right. Tons of information.
One live and direct. She can get coaching for an hour for $20 and get coaching for an hour. You usually get way more than an hour. Anybody who ever bought coaching from me know we end up being on there for quite a while. But she can get the coaching and, you know, because she sounds like she want to really take this stuff into the kitchen.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would suggest that, but the beginning of the show addressed a few tips and pointers for a beginner, and, you know, hopefully that does something for her, plant some kind of seed.
Yes, I agree. Definitely download, Nina, definitely download. And then another question, this actually came from the chat room. As for someone that is heavily involved in brutal training, such as mixed martial arts and weight training, I need fuel to keep my body going. And they are asking, can you recommend the best veggies and fruits that they should be consuming?
Okay, yeah. Any type of legume, I would say grow. And when I say legume, I mean beans. So I like to do this one bean called a Big Mama Lima bean. And the reason why I do the Big Mama Lima bean is because this particular pod, it might have three beans on them, but them beans are huge. And you get a lot of bang for your buck, but you got to have something for this bean to grow up, because this bean grows up like a trellis. It likes to climb and stuff like that. So the Big Mama Lima bean is one bean, and that's going to give you like a high yield of protein. Black beans, you can grow them. Also, I don't know, you know, some people got peanut allergies or whatever, but peanuts are beans. They're not nuts. You can grow peanuts. They grow underground, though, but you can grow peanuts. Peanuts are a great source of protein. Now, as far as you also can grow kale. Kale is very high nutritional value, does a lot as far as in the, you know, the vitamin and calcium area like that that allows your body to strengthen itself after working out and, you know, strenuous activities. Arugula, once again, has a lot of calcium in it, lots of calcium. I want to say 6 times the calcium of milk per volume.
Wow.
So if you took a glass of milk and it weighed X amount of weight and you took arugula, which you're going to have to take a lot of arugula because it's light, but then you put it on a scale and they balanced each other, that arugula has 6 times the amount of calcium that that glass of milk would have. So if you're fighting and carrying on, you're getting your bones hit, you want to have strong bones, arugula is definitely one that will give you a lot of calcium. Bok choy, cabbage, 4 times the calcium that milk has. Mushrooms. If you can grow mushrooms, we did a show with Miss Blue about how to grow mushrooms. You can do that indoors as well, but you buy mushroom kits. You can inoculate mushroom logs. Mushrooms definitely give you protein, and also after a hard workout or whatever, it's very filling, very filling. So mushrooms, legumes, arugula, bok choy. Fruit, let's see, what types of fruit that grow well? Watermelon is more of a hydration type thing. Not really much fruit. Nuts, any kind of nut tree, but when you get into nut trees, it's going to take you a long time to grow a nut tree. But any kind of nuts, definitely legumes, nuts, the arugula, and bok choy would be something that would definitely take you far as working out and martial arts and things of that nature.
Excellent. Yes, great information. I want to check the phone lines. I think that we have another caller that just popped on. Area code 214-214, you are live on the remix. Tell us who's on the line and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, no, I didn't mean to push one. I didn't even know.
Oh, okay. Okay, all right.
All right.
You enjoying the show, 214? You from Dallas, ain't you?
Did you hear that, 214?
Oh, they don't want to talk back.
I think they might have went back off, yeah. Oh, all right. So, yes, that, you know what, and that's really funny. That is actually the sister. I'm going to go back to her. Pappy, I'm going to go back to you because this is the sister that asked about creating the Earth Box. So, Happy?
Yes.
Yes, did you hear Mr. Anderson's question?
You sound happy. You sound happy.
Yep. Yeah, I'm happy.
What's the Earth Box?
Basically, the Earth Box is where you can, I guess, start a garden from out of a box, like inside a box.
Cardboard or wood?
More like I'm thinking it's more like a plastic container.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You
so,
gotta put a hole in it and stuff.
You probably cut a hole on the bottom of it and set it on top of the soil and fill it up with something, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
Okay.
And I think you got to put a tube in it or something for water to drain, to water it, I mean.
Oh, well, then you don't cut the bottom off if you got the, if you putting a tube in it. If you putting a tube in it, then you leave the bottom on the, you leave the bottom down. Yeah, I think I've seen them where they do the, they make a platform and it's water on the bottom and soil on the top. I have never, I researched it before, but I never done it because I'm pretty good with the raised bed and the growing it out the bag and stuff like that. But I would say YouTube, I'm sure you would get a whole lot of information on actually how to do it. But with you being in Texas, you still got a lot of time to get some good vegetables in. So you could either try growing it out the bag would be a lot cheaper and a lot easier than dealing with that earth box, I guarantee you.
All right, I'll try the bag.
Yeah, so go to Lowe's if you can. They sell these bags for like $1.38. It's called composted manure. Get you a couple of them bags, lay it down like a pillow, and then make cuts in it. And plant your stuff in the little cuts and keep the bag watered. The bag already got little drain holes in it, so you don't have to worry about that, but keep the bag watered till your seeds sprout. Or I'm sure they got plants out right now, bonnie plants. You can buy some bonnie plants and plant them directly down into the bag, and you should be growing like I'm growing.
And you got videos on YouTube of you doing it?
Please believe it. I got videos on YouTube. So go on YouTube and just type in I Grow, You Grow, I-G-R-O-W, U-G-R-O-W. Hit the channel. You can search the channel for any. You can search the channel for whatever you want. Like if you type in compost, it'll pull up everything dealing with compost. If you type in no dig, it'll show no dig, all of that. So, use that YouTube channel to your advantage.
Okay. All right, I'll check it out. Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
All right, I appreciate you, Happy.
All right.
All right.
Peace, Happy.
Peace.
Wonderful. Great. Wow. So much information shared tonight. Mr. Anderson, I think it would be wonderful you giving your contact information, if you could state that again, and then just talk to the Remix family about the different services that you offer and some of the different stuff that you sell. Because I know you have a lot of different products on your website that people can purchase now. And I also want us, as we close out, for you to just leave the Remix family with any, things you think that we should be paying attention to in gardening, or any things that we should be maybe focusing on, stuff that we can maybe look out for with all these weather changes and stuff going on, any of that wonderful insight that, you want to leave us with.
Okay, that's great. So basically the website right now would be the best thing for you to do, is go on to the website, and you can do that by igrowyougrow.com or .biz. That's igrowyougrow.biz or .com. And then on there, you will be able to get all of the links. It's a marketplace there. And at the marketplace, I offer garden coaching via phone. So if wherever you are, I can coach you over the phone. And usually, if you give me your location, I can do like a Google map and look at your backyard or whatever. They usually have a pretty up-to-date view of your backyard or your subdivision or whatever. And I can kind of have a visual to really, really help you. And you can get that garden coaching one-on-one, and I'll take you through all the way through the whole methodology. I have a magic grow ring, which is a fertilizing product that's organic, biodegradable, you put it around the base of the plant, and you cover it, and you all you have to do is water it, and it magically disappears in one moon cycle. And then you get 4 grow rings with your order, so it'll take you through, it'll take 2 plants through one season or 1 plant through a whole season or however you want to do it. But this magic grow ring is my creation from years of trial and error and research and development. Got some videos up showing you how my cucumbers grew with it and without it, you know, different things of that nature. I actually still have some tiger pepper seeds, purple tiger peppers.
Oh, yeah.
It's a tricolor pepper, a beautiful pepper. It's a real small pepper, but the pepper grows has variegated leaves, meaning that it's got, like, white, purple, and green leaves, and then the pepper comes out green, turns purple, turns orange, turns red. So it's just I was very intrigued by this, and I grew so many of them, I was able to get seeds like crazy. So I got, you could buy seeds, but these, you know, you wouldn't be able to plant these until the springtime.
Right.
So, you know, that's the main 3 products is the garden coaching, the magic grow ring, and the purple tiger pepper seed. I have a youth garden program that I've been running for 3 or 4 years where I teach the kids how to garden and such. And I actually take off from my day job on Tuesdays, you know, in the morning time. I use my vacation time and all this different stuff to facilitate this daycare. And I run this program solely on donation. And you can donate on the website to this youth garden program, you know, by planting seeds in the future. So you could donate there. You could support with the product, or, you know, you can just pick up on I Grow, You Grow. I mean, reciprocity, or pay it forward, or help me grow, or however you want to say it. So that's pretty much the contact information and what I offer. Everybody say, Ms. Anderson, you should write a book. I've been working on a book for a while now, and it's coming along very well. I have to say, Ms. Blue, she keeps me motivated about getting it done or whatever. So who knows, next time I come on a remix, I might be trying to sell y'all my book. That's why I ain't trying to really.
I know, that's right. Yeah.
I ain't really trying to sell you nothing right now, because I'm going to save up all my stuff. But when I make my book come out, I'm going to be hard with y'all. Buy my book. But,
I know that's right.
Yeah. So, as far as like, getting yourself in tune with gardening and such, I would just say this as far as gardening. Everybody kind of fancies gardening in the back of their head. They know it's the right thing to do. They can feel that it's going to be of a benefit to them, and that, you know, it's something that's essential to any kind of movement, and it's great knowledge to have, and it's good for your well-being, and, you know, it's just a whole bunch of positive things that go along with it. But the thing that you have to really wrap your head around is that, you know, you got to get something growing. You got to spark that interest, like grow something, one thing successful, because success breeds success. And when you deal with that soil, you become grounded. When you touch that soil and you be involved with that soil, it's like going back to your origin. Because a lot of people, you know, they look to this, you know, the different schools of thoughts or the religions or whatever to give them kind of guidance and well-being when they really can't get the answers that they want. But I would say to you that the soil and the compost and the earth and all that stuff is really man's origin, man and woman's origin. And the reason why I say that is because when a person dies, they actually are composted, but they composted in a very fancy fashion. You had this casket and do all this different kind of stuff. But before all that came along, the burial rituals was more like they would just bury you, wrap you in some cloth and bury you, and you would decompose in the earth, or you would return back to that earth. And if you look at any of these religions and schools of thought, like the Bible, it say that the man came out of the dirt. If you look at the Hanu in the Kemetic science, Hanu was sitting at a potter's wheel making men out of clay. Clay ain't nothing but mud and water. Prometheus in the Greek mythology was punished for playing tricks on Zeus and trying to rebel and stuff, and they punished him to start making man out of mud. So he had to make men out of mud. Mud is dirt.
Right. And even the old sayings that they say at the funeral when they say, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, you know, they kind of set you up for that earth to earth. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So from earth to earth y'all shall return or whatever. So basically what I'm saying to you is that wherever you look, if you kind of got your gardening glasses on, you're going to see that they're telling you that your origin is earth. And like Bruce Lee, a lot of people familiar with Bruce Lee, Bruce Lee used to say, be water, my friend. And he would say, because the water can bend, the water can heat up, the water can freeze, the water can do this, it can split a rock, it can do all these different things. Well, I say be earth, my friend. Be earth. Because in earth, you got the gold in the earth, you got the platinum in the earth, you got the oil in the earth, you got the origin of man in the earth. Earth is the beginning of everything. So be earth, my friend.
Wow. Be earth. That is so powerful. Oh, my goodness. This has been so much fun, Mr. Anderson, and definitely an honor for me because I've been listening to you on the remix for years, so I really appreciate this, and I know the Remix family has loved this share. Everyone, reach out to Mr. Anderson. Find him on YouTube, I Grow, You Grow. Visit his website, igrowyougrow.com and igrowyougrow.biz. Two ways to get to his site. Let him know how your gardening is going. Let him know all your questions. Definitely reach out for his products and his coaching. He has given us all of this coaching tonight. So thank you so much, Mr. Anderson. We definitely love you. Miss Blue is in the room. She's putting up hearts and everything. So just an excellent share. Everyone in the Remix family, don't forget to download, and like it on Facebook and everywhere. I'll see everybody tomorrow at Self Invested. And that's it, you all. Peace and love. Thank you again, Mr. Anderson.
All right. Fare you well.
All righty. Peace, Remix family.